Good morning. Welcome to our Sunday service. Welcome to those of you who are watching as it's streaming out over the internet too. And welcome to those of you who haven't seen it yet, but will see it in the future on YouTube or wherever. Send us your energy too. Since we're looking at the eternal now, we understand we can receive it even now, though you may be sending it to us in the future. Well, what a great topic, the eternal now. It's among the greatest of all mysteries. Time, we're always asking, when will I get a raise? When will I get a promotion? When will I get into a relationship? When will I get out of a relationship? When? It's just with us. A man was walking along the road. Someone came up to him and asked directions. This man was a thoughtful man. So he was asked directions about a certain destination, and he described how to get there. And then the person with the query said, "Is it within walking distance?" He kind of cocked his head and said, "Well, everything is within walking distance. It just depends on how much time you have." Swamiji says, worldly goals have their reality in time. Spiritual goals have theirs in eternity. And from kind of a more scientific perspective, Albert Einstein said that the distinction between past and present and future is only a stubbornly persistent illusion. So we even have people from a more mundane perspective agreeing. And Master said, Paramahansa Yogananda said that in reality, time does not even exist. Master says that our lives can be compared to a movie. Our experience of time in our lives. We're in a theater, perhaps. We're watching the screen. We see time moving by, hours, days, minutes. In a movie, maybe even centuries. But if the projectionist were to decide to run it backwards, then we'd be seeing time before what we had just experienced. And that we're very locked in with those images of light and shadow on the screen to the passing of them being flashed, actually one by one, these images in front of us. But Master says, were we to go to the projection booth, the projectionist has all of that, all in a reel. The entire past, present, and future is there, all existing, all present, all at once. And he says, this is what our situation is like. We're stuck down in the movie theater watching, instead of being aware, as the projectionist is, that it's all there. Reminds me of the story of a man pondering the deeper questions of life, and finally he decides to turn to God. He says, God, how long is a million years to you from your frame and your frame of reference? God responds to him and said, well, it's only a minute. So the man begins to think more and then asks, well, God, how much is $1 million in your frame of reference? And God says, only a penny. Now the man is thinking, and his next question to God is, God, would you give me a penny? And God cheerfully responds, just wait a minute. When people die and return, like a near-death experience, they often share the experience of having seen their entire life in the time they were gone. As a kid, I heard about this through my childhood. Now and then, when you die, you might see your whole life pass in front of you. Aunt Tilly, as she was leaving, said, oh, there's so-and-so, and there's so-and-so. But I was very suspicious. I thought that this was maybe some kind of a fabrication to keep us to be good I often thought that way as a kid. They were always trying to get me to be good. And that threatened me by running my whole life in front of me when I pass away. But now, with modern technology, people are being resuscitated more and more after having been dead. And more people have had this kind of experience where they see their whole life. In December 1943, Dr. George Richley, as a young man in the army at that time, died of pneumonia. And he was dead for 9 minutes, and then marvelously, he resuscitated and came back to life. And in those 9 minutes, he had a lot of adventures on what I think is the astral plane. And if you're interested in this sort of thing, it's one of the best documented, most profound near-death experiences I've read in a book called Return from Tomorrow. But when he was on the other side, Jesus came to him, a great light that he knew was Jesus, the Son of God. And one of the adventures Jesus took him on was to see his life. And he described it as his entire life happening all at once. And although he's obviously having trouble with the imagery, since it was such an otherworldly experience, was kind of like a 360-degree panorama where he could look at any point and see that part of his life, that time of his life being lived all at once, all simultaneously. Well, in spirit, it's kind of like this. Everything goes on in the present simultaneously. So even while we are here having the time of our lives, could we say, the masters, God, the great saints are able to experience everything happening quite differently. Yogananda says that joined Sri Yukteswar, his time with him, his heart had a continuous developing of devotion, a devotional song, he describes it. And when that song reached a certain point, he realized that through devotion he had sung himself into a point beyond time and beyond space. And he understood in that all of the past scenes of his life, all of his past experiences, were not really in the past. And he therefore no longer needed to grieve for those who had left him, because he could and can see them right there at any time. And this was very important to him, because as a child he had grieved greatly over the loss of his mother. And this gave him, I don't know what the master, if you say solace, but at least he pretended solace, so we could all learn from that, because it made him content. When Jesus, like all great masters who've awakened in God and forsaken the cosmic dream, realized that time and space were only temporary experiences. He was teaching in the temple at one point, and he essentially announced that in his consciousness, he had no divisions of past, present, or future. He said to them that once he announced this, he had to get out of the temple fast because they tried to stone him, but he escaped. But in announcing it, he was talking about Abraham and himself. And he didn't say Abraham was in the past, Abraham was, you know about him, but I was even before him. No, he said, before Abraham was, I am. And just in that combination of those two tenses in that same sentence, we see that he was in the eternal present. And that's what he said to them, which they weren't too happy about, that particular crowd in the temple. Well, in the same way that Jesus declared his consciousness to be beyond time and space. Yogananda did the same, and very beautifully in his poem Samadhi, when he stated, present, past, future, no more for me, but ever present, all flowing, I, your mouths are moving, you know this, I, everywhere. As today's reading suggests, rather than asking, when will I know God? The more appropriate question is not really a question, but it's an affirmation. I have him now. He is mine now. Because at this moment, if God could ever be with us, he is with us now. Because of the eternal now. All we have to do is sharpen up our reception or our perception so that we know that we have him now. In an elementary school room, the teacher had told the children that they could draw in this art class anything they wanted to. Just get out the crayons, and they weren't given a subject. They could draw whatever they wanted. And he was walking around being supportive and encouraging of the children in the class. And he came to this one little girl and said, "My, Sally, what is it you're drawing for us today?" And she said, "I'm drawing a picture of God." He says, "But Sally, no one knows what God looks like." And she looked up and said, "They will in a minute or two." We don't even need the minute or two. We can be there now. So our goal here is to move toward that direction, that comprehension, that perception of the eternal now. But we have to start where we are. We have to start with things that we can handle. Swamiji was once driving his car with a group of Ananda devotees up to go skiing, Tahoe, I think it was. And once they hit the snow line, it went a little further. Swamiji had to hit the brakes, and he had been unaware that the tread on his tires was quite thin. So he hit the brakes, the car was on ice, it shot forward and hit a bus. And the car looked like it might never drive again. The bus, of course, was untouched, as were Shant Swami's spirits. He got on the bus, not wanting to have the people he was with, his companions, disappointed, made arrangements on the bus for them all to go be carried on up to the ski area. And as they were all settled in, the bus and all, one of the other passengers had been on their approach. Swami said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. What a disaster for your time away, for your vacation. Car looks like it might be totaled," which it was. And I just feel so sorry for you. You must feel so bad. Swami turns and says, "No, why would I feel bad? I feel just fine. You know, any of us would feel fine a week from now. We wouldn't be thinking about that. Why wait? Why waste a week? Why not feel great right now?" So we can do that. You know, we can move into controlling or into perceiving that time doesn't have to dictate to us in that way. We can be joyful in the moment. Here is a level for us to aspire to right now in our efforts, our attitude. Just like Swami did, he was such a perfect example of that all through his life. Never letting anything turn him sour or get him down. So we want to direct the experiences we have, the emotions that we have, inward. Even though we're living and we try to live, we aspire to live in the moment, we're not focusing on future joys or reviewing the past. Doesn't mean that we shouldn't live without joy, that we shouldn't embrace joy and even embrace grief. But those things are to be pulled inward and moved upward. Swamiji says that the path to God can be exquisitely painful sometimes. Sorrow sometimes very slowly changes into the awareness that everything in life is illusory. But both happiness and grief, we can pull inward and move upward. And just to be very clear, nothing can be gained by numbing oneself to pleasure or to pain, or by repressing it, or by rejecting it. If we are experiencing it, though, we want to embrace it by embracing it internally and upwardly. Swami actually said at one point that numbing, he addressed this, he said, numbing is a kind of suicide. So we don't want to become numb to positive or negative things, but we want to pull them inside and let them transform. Well, how can we eventually attain this freedom from time and space, begin to experience this eternal now? Above all, the key is to contact the superconscious, our own higher self, overcoming our identification with the present and with our lesser consciousness. There are a number of yogic practices that can help us with this. Chanting, japa, visualization, they're all practices that take us outside of the usual mental control of our daily lives by bypassing the verbalizing areas in our brain. All of these practices will move us beyond the brain and thus take us to a different, a more inward reality. But the ultimate method, of course, to get us beyond the traps of time and space was referred to by Jesus in today's reading, to lift our eyes upward. Now, there's another place in the New Testament where Jesus says, if thy eye be single, then your whole body will be filled with life. And this is the key. You know, in both these cases, he's talking about our focusing, our putting energy into being able to view and eventually enter the spiritual eye, to meditate at the spiritual eye. This is his message there. Nearly all of our practices are better, move us forward more quickly, if we do them while we have an awareness, we're concentrating at the spiritual eye. There was a period in my life where I was doing japa a lot. I was doing it sometimes several hours a day. And it was very fortunate that I was doing that, because in the middle of this time I had quite a fall, maybe from 12 or 15 feet. I fell and hit the ground and did quite a bit of damage to my body, dislocated an arm, broke little pieces of bone off, had deep bruises, a bunch of things like that. But when I hit the ground, totally without any intent or volition of my own, my mantra, Om Guru, which I'd been doing at the spiritual eye, just decided to do it itself, all by itself. And all of a sudden, as I was maybe in a little shock, certainly trying to catch my breath from that fall, my mantra started happening up here with a pulse at the spiritual eye. Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru. So I'm just lying there watching it, feeling it more than anything else. And at that time, I had no sensation of pain. I was well aware that something had happened to my body, and it was in a position that I can't get into now, that, you know, it had to be hurting. But my awareness, my consciousness, had no connection with it whatsoever. And I had just been spending enough time at the spiritual eye that when there was a need, I was just able to go there with no intent of my own at all. So it's a really good thing to, as much as you can, just kind of hang out up here with as close as we can get at this point, perhaps, to the superconscious. Before we reach our ultimate goal of final liberation, merging into God beyond creation, we must merge into God in creation. So this aspect of God is called Krishna consciousness or Christ consciousness. And this is what is a real key for that. We can make progress towards experiencing the eternal now by developing our ability to move into, first of all, see, and then move into the spiritual eye, the Christ center or the Krishna center. And here we can experience that blissful consciousness in all creation. That consciousness that remains ever unchanged. Now this is the realization that every atom, every subatomic particle has that essence of the stillness of God at its core, at its heart. God is truly in everything, and we can experience that there at the Christ Center. God is at the heart of every person, every animal, every plant, every rock. And if God is in everything, guess what? He's in you. He's in me. If everything is a part of God, then you are a part of God. Master says, any devotee who attains to Christ consciousness suddenly realizes that the light of his consciousness simultaneously and evenly illumines and reveals the chambers of past, present, and future. There it is. There's our eternal now. Those souls, he says, find their consciousness equally distributed in all space and simultaneously in all the chambers of time. One more little thing that I found very interesting. I don't think I'd run across it before I was preparing for this talk. That Master said, according to Yogananda, there are stages to our experiencing the spiritual eye that are related to the parts of the spiritual eye. We very conveniently have this in front of us. I don't need a chalkboard to draw it. And this, more than I think anything else I've seen, also shows what Yogananda called the telescopic aspect of the spiritual eye, that there's depth. You know, we usually see it in a painting or a print, and it's just two-dimensional. But that at least hints at the depth of the spiritual eye. So Master said, when we are not disturbed by restless thought, we can move our consciousness into the telescopic golden ring of the spiritual eye. And there we can behold and feel all nature. The primal energy as it becomes the cosmic material world. Those are his words. We can experience the primal energy as it becomes the cosmic material world. To know the mystery of the golden ring is to know the mystery of all matter and enter into the factory of creation. Step one. Now step two. Then, if we can enter the blue telescopic eye, we become conscious of Christ consciousness, God existing in every unit of cosmic energy, everything that exists in creation, as we're talking about before, every atom. And then, and he stresses that for step number three, you really need the guru's grace and the guru's techniques. We can peer through the silver star, and then we can perceive God the Father, or God the transcendent cosmic consciousness, God beyond creation. Then we're getting pretty close to our journey's end. when we can move through that third one. Well, if we'll each commit to exploring the spiritual eye, spending more time there, using it as a focal point for our spiritual practices, we can begin to crack these mysteries of time and space. Let's bring the omnipresent Christ consciousness to earth a second time, to be born in us, even as it inhabited Jesus the Christ.